to me, I be work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. And some about that work, 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 work. When you walk a line, 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 line. I'm in the care for my tart. Dry me, I desert you. No time to have you lurking. You might go like me, you know, like. You know, I've done what you denied. Nobody touched me in a room.
Welcome to WitWorks Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 19th. I'm Abby Pober from Co-ops and Careers, and today I am joined by two exceptional colleagues of mine, and we're here to talk about mindfulness in your career.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kristen Ekman. I'm also from Co-ops and Careers.
And I'm Bridget McNamee, the Associate Director of the Center for Wellness and Disability Services and co-chair of Project 40, which is Wentworth's Resiliency Committee.
Bridget, thank you so much for joining us today. So I invited Bridget on the radio today because I am on the Project 40 committee with her, and we talk a lot about mindfulness, and it's a big topic today. So Bridget, do you mind telling us, like, what is mindfulness? Can we define that first for our listeners?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, really simple and also really difficult to kind of get our heads around what mindfulness is. I think a lot of people have assumptions about what it is, but really what it is and this is a definition, this is not my definition, this is Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition, and he is a founder of the mindfulness-based stress reduction program at UMass Medical School, so he's a real guru, a real pioneer in this field, and he defines mindfulness that as awareness that arises through paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. So it's paying attention on purpose, present moment, non-judgmentally. So it's just kind of being really present in what you're doing at any given time.
All right.
Is mindfulness.
That makes some sense. You look like you had a question, Kristen.
No, that's really hard to do sometimes.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It takes a lot of practice.
Especially when we're thinking about it in your career and having to juggle all of the things you have to do at work and then, trying to maintain mindfulness as well. So that also sounds a little bit like meditation. So what's the difference between mindfulness and meditation?
Great question. And there's a lot of overlap. It's like you can't really have mindfulness without meditation. You can't have meditation without mindfulness, but they are different. Whereas mindfulness is kind of that act of paying attention with kind of whatever you're doing in that moment. So it's, you can be at any time, anywhere, with anyone, right? You can be doing it, when you're commuting to work. You can be doing it as you're, focusing on a job task or really attending during a meeting and things like that. Versus meditation, which is a real dedicated set intention that you're doing. So you're setting aside a specific amount of time on a regular basis, and it's much more inward, where mindfulness is kind of anything, anywhere, anytime. Meditation is a very inward practice. Mm-hmm. You know, you're actually practicing. So there's lots of different kinds of meditation. It can be, you know, there's people who meditate for hours and hours and hours a day. Not most people. It's not realistic for most people. But it can be 1 minute a day of, you know, just focusing on your breath. But it's that dedicated time that you're setting aside to actually practice staying in the present moment.
Okay. So then what are ways that if a student or a faculty or a staff member, anybody really on the campus or outside of Wentworth, how, if they don't have the ability to dedicate time every day or, you know, really set aside time, how can they practice mindfulness?
Yeah. So just start somewhere, right? Like it can be helpful to just start with something that's already part of your routine, sure. Right? So something that you do every day, like brushing your teeth, you know, instead of like, I don't know, I'm guilty of this when I'm brushing my teeth. I'm not thinking about brushing my teeth. I'm thinking about my to-do list, my grocery list, you know, anything but the act of brushing my teeth. But if I really am more mindful when I'm brushing my teeth, I'm paying attention to how the toothpaste looks, how the toothbrush feels in my hand, how my arms are and my hands are moving to brush over my teeth. I'm focusing on each individual tooth. I'm focusing on how my feet feel on the floor. So, you know, you're really just tuning in to what you're doing in that moment, which is brushing your teeth. The physical, kind of your what your body's doing, what your feet, the sensory, kind of how it feels, how it looks, how it smells. And I'm not thinking about my grocery list. I'm not thinking about my to-do list. I'm not worried about something that happened at work yesterday. I'm not anxious about a big meeting I have later in the day. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about brushing my teeth.
I have a really bad confession. This morning I was practicing yoga, and I was literally thinking about my to-do list while I'm practicing yoga, which is the antithesis of what you're supposed to be doing.
But you know what? That's mindfulness because you noticed it.
True.
Right? You probably judged yourself for
totally.
It. You just did. You said it's the antithesis of what I was supposed to be doing, which is not mindfulness, right? We're supposed to just be noticing and not judging. We're being kind to ourselves. We're like, oh, that's interesting. Look at me. I'm noticing. I'm thinking about my to-do list.
Right.
I'm going to try to rein myself back in and focus on the poses and focus on my breathing. Mm-hmm. And you know, and then you're going to instantly go back to thinking about your to-do list, but you're going to notice it and you're going to bring yourself back to focus on. That's what it is. It's not realistic to expect that you're going to be able to be like, I'm going to practice mindfulness today, and that your mind's not going to wander. Right? Like the mindfulness community uses this term monkey mind, and you know, it's a great term because you can kind of see it's like we're jumping all over the place and right. It's everywhere. And so the practice of mindfulness and the practice of meditation tames that monkey mind. The goal is not perfection. The goal is just notice when your mind wanders and make a conscious effort to bring it back to what you're doing.
I'm really glad you kind of gave students the permission, or our listeners the permission, to forgive yourself. Because I think, you know, even when I was practicing this morning, and I felt bad about totally not being present in the moment. And to sit here and be reminded, like, no, it's a good thing that I noticed that, is, as somebody who tries to practice mindfulness regularly, it's still kind of like a struggle, a work in progress for me.
It's essential that you noticed it.
Yeah.
You know, like that's an essential component of mindfulness. And you did.
Yeah.
And so going the next time you do it, you might be more inclined to be like, okay, I'm going to really start off focused on what I'm doing. You know, and then you'll be more inclined to notice when that drifts off. And then you just bring yourself back.
Yeah.
Right, and that sounds like a starting point. Like if someone wants to start, you know, getting into being more conscious and mindful about their day, they're going through their tasks and they realize, like, I'm thinking of something else.
You should congratulate yourself for realizing you weren't on track.
Right. I heard a great example, a great way to describe it is like your brain is like a wild horse that you're taming. So, you know, you start off by, you know, trying to be present, focusing on your breath or whatever you're doing, and then you let it run, you know, you let it run for a minute, and then you rein it back in, and you, again, focus, and you try to focus a little bit more, right, for a little bit longer, not focus, but be mindful, a little bit longer, and then let it run. You know, but maybe instead of for a full minute, you let it run for 45 seconds. And then, you know, so thinking about your kind of like lassoing that wild horse that is your brain, but giving yourself permission, you know, it's like exercise. You know, you don't start off just running a marathon. Maybe you start off running a quarter mile and then you build, you know, the brain's a muscle, just like anything else. So as you build up your stamina, you know, you'll find you get a little bit better at it.
Yeah. Oh boy. So we talked a lot about, we kind of are alluding to being present in the moment right now in all of this discussion, whether it's through integrating mindfulness into your daily practices or actually dedicating some time for meditation. So why is it so important for us to be present?
Yeah. So there's a lot of great research on this by our neighbors at Harvard. There's a ton, School of Public Health, Harvard Medical School. And there was a study fairly recently that showed that almost 50% of our time, like that we're doing things, we're thinking about something other than what we're doing. So we spend half our lives essentially thinking about things other than what we're actually doing. Yikes. And, you know, instead of thinking about what we're actually doing, what we tend to be doing is maybe worrying about something that's that maybe could happen in the future, or dwelling on something that happened in the past, or wishing we did something differently, right? Which all of those things combined is kind of like a recipe for misery. So what the interesting part of the study, it's not really surprising, I guess, that half our time we're not focusing. And if you're a human being in this world, you know that probably half the time you're not fully present with what you're doing.
Right.
But the most interesting part of the study for me was the correlation they were able to draw with the study participants reporting of satisfaction and happiness.
Sure.
And there was a direct correlation with the amount of time spent thinking about other things and the amount of dissatisfaction, like life dissatisfaction, that they reported. So again, it's kind of like this recipe for misery when you're not able to really kind of be here now and focus on what you're actually doing versus dwelling on the past or worrying about the future.
I can totally imagine, like, if you are, you know, like you said, dwelling on past things while you're in the present, you're missing a lot of things. So you might be missing, like, a really great opportunity or a really great conversation, or someone might pass by you that you've been meaning to speak with and you miss that.
You know where I think about this a lot is those times in meetings where I could have been distracted, like my mind started to wander. But I pulled it back in, I reined it back in, I started to focus in the meeting, and I ended up picking up on something really, really important, or like I heard a detail that kind of catapulted a new idea for us. So those are the moments where I'm super grateful of a mindfulness practice, because I tend to be known to kind of daydream from time to time.
Right. Who doesn't? That's such a human thing. That's an important thing to remember, is like that is being human. Our brains, we're wired to be kind of hyper vigilant and hyper alert of everything that's going on around us. That's from our, like, you know, cave people days, where you had to be aware and always prepared for the worst case scenario, because there were animals out there that were ready to eat you. You were in the elements, like it was survival, right?
Sure.
So this is, we've evolved a lot since that time, but our brains still retain a lot of the primal, you know, fight or flight response and things like that. So it's a very normal human thing. You know, to really have a mindfulness practice, you have to really work against the nature of how our brains are wired, which, you know, is really, really, really hard to do.
Yeah. I had an idea about the importance of being present, and it's totally gone. It flew away.
Are you thinking about other things?
I was. I think I was.
Do you want me to tell you about increased gray matter?
I do.
Which, I'm not a scientist, but another really, I think, incredible finding with some of the research that's been done over at Harvard is that they were able to demonstrate that people in the study that had a regular mindfulness practice of an average of 27 minutes a day, which is a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot of time.
It's a lot.
But they were able to show an increase in gray matter in certain parts of the brain that control our emotional response, impulse control, focus and concentration, empathy, like these really critical parts of the brain. They were able to show an increased gray matter, which means, like, again, I'm not a scientist, I'm certainly not a brain expert, but pretty much if you have more gray matter, you have more space for, like, neurons and synapses and connections and things to happen. So it makes for a more robust part of those parts of the brain. So they work more and they work better.
It honestly sounds like brain strength training.
That's exactly what it is. It's a great way to put it, you know? And the interesting thing is it was the consistency that they studied. So they're not sure if you could have the same results if you meditated for 2 hours every Monday and then not again for the rest of the week, right? So it was more the daily regular, consistent practice. And they've also, they haven't been able to show, they haven't studied for less time. So, you know, this study had certain time parameters, and the average they came up with was 27 minutes is what they could identify was like the key that or more to increase the gray matter in the brain, or to cause the changes, the positive changes in the brain. But people reported that as few as 10 minutes a day, they reported feeling better in all of those areas. Impulse control, focus, concentration, overall happiness, and things like that. So they need to study that. They don't have the brain scans to see if the same physical response happens with the brain, but people have reported out that they get the same benefits as those people meditating longer.
Wow. That's... It's unbelievable how it's such like a little, just a seemingly small change, which is actually difficult to enact, but a small change can really impact your whole life.
Right.
And I mean, that's why I'm on Project 40. I've seen the benefits of this kind of a practice and, you know, self-care and taking care of your mind and your body and all of that, and how it can really impact your mental health and your career and your ability to succeed at work and your ability to support your family and your friends and everything. So, it's really, that's why we're talking about this today, I think.
Right. I mean, you can literally change your brain. That's new information. They used to think the brain was the brain and it did not change. And now they've proven by doing certain things, like, no, you can change it. They call it brain elasticity is what they call it.
That's so cool. I think this might be a good time to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the benefits of mindfulness more, and then how it can actually apply to you at work and that sort of thing. So we will be back in just a moment.
Looking at you. Oh.
we're back. Good break, everybody. So we're talking about mindfulness, and there's a lot of really important benefits that can be derived from being mindful and practicing mindfulness throughout your day and throughout your weeks. And we just talked about the gray matter, but what are some other benefits?
Yeah. So a regular mindfulness practice, kind of all those kind of feel-good brain chemicals that we have that keep our mood stable and our immune system functioning and our ability to sleep and, you know, connect with people, like all of those things are kind of stimulated. They go into overdrive in a good way with a regular mindfulness practice. And those more negative brain chemicals, like a lot of us have heard about cortisol, that's the stress hormone, which a little bit is good, a little bit is necessary, but like too much is not good. That's what's really bad for your heart and your cardiovascular system and your brain, and doesn't make you feel very good. So a regular mindfulness practice reduces the bad stuff and kind of gives it a real nice lift to the good stuff. So serotonin, some of us have heard of that. That's really, really important for our mood, right? So too little serotonin can result in, you know, some mood instability. Sometimes people, if it's significant enough, it can be depression. So if you don't have enough serotonin, your mood isn't great. Regular mindfulness can boost that, like significant percentages. I forget what they are, but it's significant. Melatonin, again, we've all know that kind of as like the sleep hormone, but it's also really important for your immune system. And what it's so hard to come by now, because what really drains the melatonin out of us is screens, looking at screens. Phones, TVs, computers, like you name it. It's the light. So the light plays tricks on the brain. You know, people have heard like, oh, if you're having trouble sleeping, you should, you know, not look at a screen maybe for an hour before to give your brain time to adjust and like let them know like, oh, it's nighttime, it's, you know, time to sleep. So it's melatonin's always been really important, but now it's even more important to really like give yourself a fighting chance, because there's it's really hard to go through life without screens, especially at work. So much of our work is spent sitting in front of a screen. So regular mindfulness practice can give yourself a huge jump in melatonin. So you're sleeping better, you're staying healthier, you know, overall just feeling better. Also really interesting is endorphins. So a lot of us know of endorphins as kind of like the in the zone chemical that a lot of athletes will talk about, like runner's high. You know, maybe don't feel so great physically when you're working out really hard, but like when you're done, you get this awesome boost of just like you're really clear headed and focused, but also really calm and zen. It's just a great feeling. So they've done studies showing that mindfulness practice can release the same level of endorphins as someone who just went for a long run.
Wow.
So you can get that same feel-good zen, and also for focus and concentration from a regular mindfulness practice. And then again, the cortisol, like the stress, again, a little bit is good, keeps you on your toes, keeps you motivated. Too much is not good. It's not good for your heart. It's not good for your brain. It's not good for any of it. And a regular mindfulness practice has been shown to reduce cortisol levels by half. Significant, like significant, significant results on how we can use mindfulness to deal with stress. So I know it's a lot of sciencey brain stuff, but you can't, it's research-based. The evidence is so clear how beneficial a regular mindfulness practice is for your mind and your body.
And I think, I mean, just speaking from my own personal experience, I think the return on your quote-unquote investment there is realized really quickly. I mean, within a week of, like, active practicing, kind of being mindful and trying not to be distracted or pick up. One thing, and I want to challenge all of our, I want to challenge our listeners if they can. Every time you pick up your phone, question why you're picking it up. Because if you don't have a reason for picking up your phone and you're just bored and you just checked Twitter 12 minutes ago, nothing's probably changed in those 12 minutes, hopefully. but ask yourself why you're picking up your phone, because I noticed immediate benefits to my sleep and that sort of thing. Because a lot of times I was picking up my phone at like 8 o'clock at night when I didn't want to watch another show, but I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do or how to get ready for bed or any of that stuff. And so I would just look at my phone and Or like how many of us sit there and are on our phones and we'll be reading something like an important email and then just double click over to Instagram.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why?
And there's a lot of good things you can do, like if you're an emerging mindfulness practitioner and you need some help. So like sometimes what I'll do is I'll like keep my phone away from me. Like at work, I'll keep it in another drawer. So I have to actually physically stand up, walk over and get it. Mm-hmm. Or at home, I'll keep it on a counter so that, you know, I could hear it if somebody calls me. But if I want to just mindlessly scroll, I can't because I actually have to think about it, get up, go to it. And that gives you the time, that pause time in between to be like, do I really want, do I need this? What am I doing right now? I'm watching a show. Do I need to be scrolling through Instagram while I'm also watching TV?
Right.
And if I really want to, I'll get up and I'll do it. But it's giving yourself that pause time that really is beneficial. Even as simple as like on your phone, the way you organize your apps, if you kind of push the things you're most likely to go to on like the last screen, so you have to do some extra scrolling, it might let you give you that time to really pause and be like, you know, I don't really care, or I really need to be focusing on what I'm doing right now and not let myself get distracted by this other thing.
That's really important, even just taking a pause at any moment and really thinking about, okay, let me take a second, what do I really need to do right now? What am I thinking about, like planning, you know, planning your day, planning your next task? I think it's really important to just kind of take a second, take a breather.
Yep.
Even maybe like a minute, 30 seconds, kind of just calm down, regroup. Mm-hmm.
Comes in real handy at work, especially if we think about our reactions to things. So what it does is, a regular mindfulness practice kind of really strengthens that part of the brain for kind of our kind of impulse control and, you know, kind of social, emotional, that whole chunk. And so if you're at work and you're annoyed, you know, maybe if you tend to be someone who tends to react, you know, as opposed to respond, and sometimes I can get you into trouble, especially at work, you know, if you don't take that pause, a regular mindfulness practice might be really beneficial, right? If you can kind of, you know, build up that part of your brain so that you can kind of like take a step back, think about how you want to respond to the situation as opposed to just knee-jerk react to it, might save you a whole lot of trouble.
That's a really great transition into tools that people can use to bring with them to work. And I think Kristen brought up a really good point about just, you know, sitting down and writing an intention for your day is a great way to start your day. Even if it's just a post-it note with your five top to-dos or your three priorities for the day. Mm-hmm. And I think from my experience, I think limiting those to-do lists is really helpful because it's also being mindful about what you can accomplish in a day. So it gives you that. And then, I mean, take that down, you know, a year, 2 years down the road, you then have a really good understanding of how long it takes you to do, or even 6 months after doing this, you have a really good idea of how long it takes you to do all of your different tasks.
Right. Absolutely. I think even I relate to that really as a new professional and kind of realizing how long it takes me to write an email, how long it takes me to respond to a coworker's question. And, you know, because I love making lists. But it is kind of stressful when you can't finish everything on your list, or you do make your goals for the day and you don't get to accomplish all of those. And it is kind of, it takes you back a step.
Right. And how do you manage that? You know, like there's no way to go through life, especially at work, with like completely avoiding stress. There's deadlines. There's always too much to do and not enough time to do it. There can be really high expectations, you know, from supervisors, or and you might think maybe unreasonably high expectations from supervisors at times, especially as you're new and kind of figuring it out. You may have really unreasonable high expectations for yourself, more likely, right? That you're expecting too much of yourself at, you know, in certain situations. And if you have the skills to kind of harness, first of all, to notice, right? A lot of us probably go through our day feeling pretty stressed out or anxious, whatever word you want to use, but not even really noticing. We just feel bad. We can't tap into like what the feeling is or what the trigger is for the feeling, right? So if we can use mindfulness, that is just being present in what you're doing, how you're feeling, just paying attention to what's going on in that moment. If you can use it to harness, to kind of wrangle that stress and use it to your advantage, right? We can't avoid it. You know, we have to figure out how to work with it. So can we think about, you know, first of all, notice, okay, when I see this to-do list, what does my body feel like? You know, do I tense up immediately? Do I get butterflies in my stomach? Does my heartbeat race a little faster? Like, there's all those physical responses to stress. Like, some of us are kind of sweaty. Some of us have raced, you know, our breaths get shorter and quicker. Hearts start to beat faster. Butterflies in the stomach. So notice those physical reactions. And you can kind of reframe what those physical reactions are doing, right? There's two ways to look at a racing heart. You can be like, oh my God, my heart is racing so fast. I'm so nervous. I feel so bad. Or you can say, wow, my heart's really beating. It's pumping a lot of blood to my brain and it's helping me to think and focus, you know, like
break
you can
it down.
Break it down and just, and also like, what's the positive, right? What's the positive side to it? Or, whoa, my breaths are really short and fast and that's making my stomach kind of tighten up and that doesn't feel so great. So I'm going to try to maybe, you know, make my, you know, exhales a little bit longer, you know, and I'm going to count. So I'm going to go from like half a second to maybe I'll make it a full second or maybe I'll make it 3 seconds. You know, be reasonable with yourself, but just it's the noticing. And it's, is this serving me? Do I mind this? Can I still function? Am I feeling okay? Okay, fine. Or is this not serving me? Am I distracted by it? Do I feel sick? Is it, you know, is it making me feel even worse, you know, then I should probably do something about it. I think the point is we have control. We have a lot of control over how our days go and how our bodies react to things and our minds react to things. You just have to practice. You have to build up that muscle.
Right.
It's so incredible. The human body, I think we just go, 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 and we don't really realize how our bodies are working and working for us. And it is important to definitely take a step back.
And all those physical reactions you just mentioned, it brings me right to the students who are interviewing for co-op and jobs. And
so useful for interviewing. Interviewing's the worst.
It is the worst. And everybody gets, you know, their heart races or they start to sweat more. It's super nerve-wracking. And so I think being mindful a little bit that it's good you're nervous because that means you care. So that's like a really, I think, important association to make. But then also taking these tools that we've just talked about to sort of level the playing field a little bit for yourself.
Yes, absolutely. When you're sitting in that chair and like sometimes you're sitting in a chair and you've got a table, like a boardroom table full of people on the other side just asking you questions. That is not a normal situation to be in.
No.
And then I don't know if there's a person on this earth that is not nervous or comfortable in that situation. And if you can just kind of be present and not try not to worry so much about what you might say or might not say, or dwell on what you said and what you wish you had said, and just be in the here and now, paying attention to what you're, you know, how your body's responding to that moment, trying to make little adjustments where you can if you need to, you'll be clearer. You know, you will be clearer, you will be more focused. That science shows it. You know, regular mindfulness practice improves your focus, your concentration, your memory, your ability to empathize with people. So just think about how that translates into the interview setting, right? Focus, personable, clear, you know, all of those things. Think about how that translates into the actual work environment. You know, if you have a lot of empathy and, you know, good impulse control and social emotional control, you're going to be a delight to work with, right? If your ability to kind of retain information and work with information, you're going to be a great coworker and a great, person to supervise by a boss, right? So all of these things, it feels very kind of, we talked a lot about brain stuff, so it feels very, very high level, but it translates in very real ways, like in very functional ways. And whether, you know, we've talked a lot about work, but obviously all these translate to just life in general as well, and mm-hmm. school, of yeah. course.
Well, you cannot be good at work or in school. You cannot be bring your best self to the table if you're not taking care of yourself personally.
Exactly.
That's mindfulness is just taking care of one piece of that whole puzzle there, but it's a huge piece, and it's I think arguably the one that most people have access to implementing into their life.
Yep.
So it's the easiest, I'm using quotes there, the easiest to implement because it's so accessible to so many people.
Right.
Whereas exercise is another, you know, proven benefit, that sort of thing, but that's not accessible to everybody.
Right.
So mindfulness is something that pretty much anybody can do.
Exactly. And you can do it anywhere, right? Yeah. You don't have to be in a quiet, dark room meditating, you know, for hours and hours and hours a day. You can start by, on your commute, like honestly, I take the T to work, and that can be a really challenging,
oh yeah,
challenging experience for patients. You know, my patients, it tests my patients. There's just lots of things that can happen at any given time, and it can be very stressful because it's, you know, it doesn't run on time. And I started by just kind of thinking, just noticing, it's like, wow, I'm really annoyed right now. And okay, I'm noticing that. And then it would just go away, as opposed to like holding on to that and just being really annoyed at that backpack that keeps slamming me in the face over and over and over again. I was really able to kind of shift to be like, oh, that's really, I really wish that wasn't happening right now, but it is. You know, it's like, can it be something as silly and simple as that, but it makes you feel better. If you're not holding on to like in like building up this rage because a backpack's slamming in the face and they really should be taking their backpacks off on a crowded train, you know, you feel better.
Yeah.
Like I felt better, you know, by just kind of acknowledging it and letting it go, knowing that my stop was two stops away and it was not a forever thing, you know, and that you can carry that with you in anything, traffic, you know, disappointment about a grade yeah. or disappointment about a job or a promotion or something. You can, you know, just acknowledge it, allow yourself to feel it. Pay attention to it, notice how it feels, and it's easier to just kind of let it go and move on, you know, so you're not, you know, dwelling or anticipating.
And you have so much power over the way that you choose to act in a certain situation. Mm-hmm. You notice what's going on, because I know on the train I like to people watch, so mm-hmm. if I saw you, you know, maybe taking a deep breath and not getting annoyed or, you know, expressing how mm-hmm. you're feeling, I would be like, oh, good, wow, I need to take a second back, right. And maybe this person is standing a little too close to me, but mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. And
it's a perfect example of how it makes you kinder, right? It's mm-hmm. a perfect example of, like, building up the gray matter to kind of make you a more kind, empathic person. So instead of yelling at someone who's annoying you, you just let it go, which mm-hmm. is an act of kindness, however subtle.
And the cool part is it compounds on each other. So the more you do it, the easier it gets mm-hmm. to actually not get annoyed.
Right. Because you're paying attention.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is awesome. And so I think that now we've reached the point where our listeners can kind of learn more on their own. So you've given us some really great resources here. And I'm going to start off by mentioning The Happiness Advantage, which is a book written by Sean Aker, because that's what Project 40 is based off of. Am I right?
Yep, correct. He's a great TED Talk, too.
I totally recommend the TED Talk, and we'll link to it. We're actually going to do a blog post follow-up on this, so mm-hmm. we'll share that. And all of these resources that we're about to talk about quickly will be on there. But The Happiness, I had the opportunity to watch him speak live at the Women's Conference this year, and I had already heard a lot of this stuff. I had already known most of this, but the energy that he brought to the conversation and the perspective that he brings is really, it changed my mind even that much more mm-hmm. being knowledgeable and informed.
Yep.
So I think it's a great place to start.
And it's the science. Like, he brings the science behind it, right? It's not just, not to minimize, but it's not, for some people, it's not as accessible when you have maybe a yogi looking, mm-hmm. you know, like if that's not necessarily as relatable for a lot of people, but like this guy, he's talking from
a
very
Harvard researcher.
He's a researcher. So he studies people, you know, and he's got the data to back up the effectiveness of these practices and how it can really positively influence you in your career. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what he's very focused on,
yeah.
is the career effects of this type of stuff.
So I'll tweet that TED Talk out, I think, yeah. later on this week, independently from the blog post. But you've listed some apps here. So
yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about those apps?
The apps are great. They all have free versions.
Mm-hmm.
So calm.com, it's great. You know, can give you just background, like a sound machine of like calming noises. You can get put it right up on your computer if you find like some calming noises helpful for focus, you know, like trickling water. It's also an app on your phone, and they'll have some guided mindfulness, meaning someone was kind of talking you through it, which I personally find really useful. It helps keep me on my toes versus just sitting in silence. I think that's important, but it takes a lot.
Right.
A lot of practice to get there. So for me, guided practice, having somebody kind of talk me through it is helpful. Headspace is very similar. All different. You can get a 2-minute. You can get a 10-minute. They have series in there. So if you want to work on focus, you can do a 10-part series. If you want to work on mindful eating, you can do a 10-part series. There's stuff for your commute. And then 10% Happier, which is also a book that I referenced to by Dan Harris, is a full app and similar, has guided mindfulness practices. The free versions are much more limited, obviously, than the pay versions. Some of them do have student pricing,
right.
Which can be helpful. A lot of them will have like 30-day free trials of the full version. If people want to try that just to see if it's worth it. To make that investment. But there's also a lot of free stuff on YouTube too. I didn't list that, but YouTube has a lot of awesome free guided mindfulness little videos.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of books, 10% Happier, I really recommend that book. And then Dan Harris also wrote a new book, Mindfulness for the Fidgety Skeptics, because that's who he was. And Dan Harris is a journalist, and he had a breakdown on the air.
Wow.
So, and that's what prompted him to kind of write this book and chronicle his experience. And it's really been obviously life-changing for him. But it's really well-written, and it reads, you know, kind of reads like a novel, so it's not too heavy. The How of Happiness by Sonia Lubomirsky is fantastic. That is more of a science-y, research-y kind of book. That's what a lot of Project 40, that's where a lot of Project 40 comes from. But it's really interesting, and even if you just were interested in learning more about the science component of it, just Googling Sonia Lubomirsky can get you some shorter articles.
Mm.
But if you were going to pick one thing, I would go either the Happiness Advantage or 10% Happier.
Yeah.
I think they're easy reads. They're really interesting. They're not too long.
Mm-hmm.
Not great.
I read 10% Happier and I loved it. And the Happiness Advantage is sitting on my ever growing nightstand mm-hmm. book list.
It's a great one to listen to too.
Really?
The Happiness Advantage as an audiobook.
Okay.
I think that's how I read it. So
that's great advice.
Helpful.
And there's also, we'll link to these again, but there's on lynda.com, which all Wentworth students have access to through their network login information. There's a couple of good mindfulness tutorials on there under the business section. So we'll link to those directly, actually.
Right. And it's so interesting that they're in the business section. That should tell you something.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
That should be a sign that, like, as, you know, professionals or new professionals getting out there, this is a hot topic. So,
and I don't think it's going anywhere.
I don't either. Well, it's the science, right? It works.
Yeah, it does. Do you have anything to add, Kristen?
I don't think I do. This is a really great topic.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got to discuss.
Yeah, this was really great.
Bridget, I'm so glad that you joined us today to talk about this. I do have a couple of housekeeping things for everybody. Drop-in hours at the Co-op and Career Office and with advisors in the Co-op and Career Office are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday from 1:30 to 4. And career fair registration is officially open on WITWORK. So students, yay, RSVP, make sure you get your color-coded name badge, because you can't get into Tansy Gym on March 19th without a name tag. So if you don't register, you're going to have to make one and handwrite it. I think that's all I got from announcements.
Yeah. We will have a prep week,
yep,
again before career fair. So the week after you guys get back from spring break, but that is a few weeks from now.
Yeah, you'll see all of the marketing out there on how to navigate your path to the co-op and career fair this semester.
Can I plug a couple things?
Yes, please do.
So this semester, I've been leading a guided mindfulness session on Tuesdays. We call it Tranquil Tuesdays. It's every Tuesday from 11:30 to like 11:40, 11:45, right here in Beatty 014. And we just run a Headspace 10-minute, you know, guided meditation. So it's for anyone who either wants to incorporate more meditation into their week or has never tried it before and is curious. It's open, so I strongly encourage anyone who's curious. That's kind of an easy, structured way to start. And then the Center for Wellness has also been running an anxiety workshop, and that's every Thursday at noon in Beatty 014. It's open. You do not have to be a client of the Center for Wellness. You don't have to pre-sign up. And it's relevant because you don't have to have a diagnosis of anxiety. It's for anyone who's just feeling
anxious,
stressed, and wants to build their toolbox, you know, fill their toolbox with some strategies they can use to kind of manage that. There's a lot of mindfulness-ish type things that are talked about in that group. So that's open to anyone. Thursdays at noon, Beatty 014.
Student, staff, faculty?
It's students. Students, sorry. Family. Any student. Great. So you don't have to be a client. You don't have to have a diagnosis or a history of anxiety or any other mental health condition or disability. You can just go.
Awesome. Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely check that out. Mindfulness helps with anxiety. For sure.
Sure does.
All right. Well, I think that's everything. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great rest of the week, everyone.